Chapter 18. The day after his session with Gwen, Jackson sullenly comes up to Styles during lunch and slaps a piece of paper into his palm. Then he walks away without saying anything. Styles unfolds it to see a written message. He's somewhat unsurprised to see that it's a haiku. When the change comes on, where you go to be yourselves, away from the world. I really hate this guy, Styles remarks, and the others give him a questioning look. He shoves the paper down into his pants pocket. He wants to meet at our warehouse at Moonrise. Of course he couldn't just say that. He had to write me poetry. I should tell him he needs to buy me dinner next time. Lydia, what time is Moonrise? 1:30, she says. Styles groans. Of course it's in the middle of the night. Fuck my life.
You could catch a few hours of sleep beforehand, Boyd suggests.
Yeah, sure, Styles says, already doubting that'll happen. His session with Gwen had given him some really horrific nightmares. He had slept a few hours on the porch before they set in, but after that, he had barely slept. If he goes to sleep at 10 p.m., he won't be waking up at 1 a.m. to corner a psychopathic sorcerer. It'll be Adderall and caffeine for him. That's what he plans, at least. But then he goes straight home after school, along with several of the others, and decides to lie down for a minute. Erica flops down beside him and says, God, you're tense. Let me give you a back rub. And Styles thinks that will be a great idea for his hormones. But somehow Erica's hands are firm and professional and very relaxing. It probably helps that she doesn't make him take his shirt off. He falls asleep 3 minutes later and sleeps soundly for almost 7 hours. When he wakes up, he has just enough time to eat some dinner and bust through the majority of his homework before it's time to leave. He wants to get there early, so they have time to do a little prep work. He wants to get a camera set up over the door and one down the street. He's hoping that he can get a shot of Stone's arrival, preferably one of his car. It might help him track the man down. Allison, Derek, you're with me, he says, as he watches Isaac scale the wall to put the camera over the door. Derek, you're my polygraph. I want you to let me know whenever his heartbeat picks up. I'm gonna see how uncomfortable I can make him. Allison, do what you do best. Shoot him? She asks, twirling a strand of hair around her finger. If necessary, yeah, but let's not start a fight we can't win, Styles replies. The rest of you I just want spread out. Keep him surrounded, but do not move on him unless he's actively attacking. Everyone's in agreement. Styles wonders how Stone even knows where they go during the full moon, especially since they've avoided the warehouse since they've known he was watching them. But there doesn't seem to be much point in asking. The others shift and range out. There's plenty of space for them to hide. Allison takes a high point, positioning herself in the rafters, where she can stay out of sight and keep her arrow trained on Stone's back. Derek stands right by Styles, while the others melt into darkness. Tactically, the warehouse is a terrible choice for Stone, and that just pisses Styles off more, because he's clearly not even worried about it. For once, Stone doesn't just show up out of nowhere. They hear the door to the outside creak open with its usual groan of hinges. He walks over and stands with completely careless nonchalance, obviously not at all bothered by the wolves ringing him in or the way they're growling at him. In fact, he just smiles. Styles agrees with Danny's assessment of Stone's smile. It's creepy. It's a malicious smile. And I'm taking joy in your pain smile. Styles squares his shoulders and steps out from between two of the stacks of old machinery into the middle of the circle, so he's facing Stone from about 10 feet away. He can be dramatic too. Derek walks out next to him, sliding his hand into Styles and giving it a reassuring squeeze. Hey, Sebastian, he says. Is it okay if I call you Sebastian, by the way? It just seems like you're going to be sticking around for a while, so clearly we're going to be pals. Stone's smile just widens.
You may call me whatever you like, he says. Now that's just asking for trouble, Stiles says, shaking his head. So I thought we could have a little chat. I would have suggested Starbucks, but I don't think that's really your area anymore. I hope you haven't been living in your car or anything. That would just be embarrassing. No, I'm quite well accommodated, Stone says. Thanks for your concern. Anytime, big guy, Stiles says. But, see, I'm a little worried about my pal Jackson. I don't think his Neanderthal brain is really set up to process the magic you're teaching him. Plus, he doesn't do very well at playing second fiddle. Not that I think he could actually do anything to you, but doesn't his constant whining get on your nerves? I've taught worse, Stone says. At least he actually has some real talent. Yeah, that's Jackson, Stiles agrees. He's just good at everything. So, hey, can I ask you a question? Since we're all just hanging around here, I've got a problem with a friend that I'm hoping you can help me out with. By all means, Stone says, that smile curving wider. He's still just standing in the center of the circle, never once looking around to check the positions of the wolves. Okay, this friend of mine, Stiles says, he's a nice guy. Like, a really nice guy. One of those guys who's too nice for their own good. You probably don't understand that. But then again, neither do I. And he's got a problem. Because there's some asshole giving him shit. Corrupting minors, getting them hooked on black magic, casting nasty spells on people he tries to watch out for. Like the son of this woman he really cares about, that he swore to protect. He says he can't do anything about the asshole because he owes the guy a debt. But I'm not sure if debts are magically binding or if that's just something he feels he has to uphold. Because, hey, he's a nice guy. I thought to myself, you know, I should ask Sebastian about this. He seems to know all about magic and stuff. Stone is still smiling, but somehow he doesn't look quite as amused anymore. Sounds like your friend is in quite a pickle, he says. Yeah, Stiles says. The more so, because I don't even think he owes this guy a debt at all. I just think he thinks he does. Stone goes still. Derek squeezes Stiles' hand, hard, and Stiles can barely keep the feral grin off his face. Deaton's always been a better sorcerer than you, Stiles says, the flippant note gone from his voice now, confidence in every word. That's why you stayed at the Saunders. It wasn't because you cared about Deaton. It was because he was teaching you. Because, you know, I looked through all your records. You were never in one place long enough to have had a teacher. Until you got there. But Deaton, not only is he more naturally talented, but he lived almost 3 years with a foster mother who owned a spiritual shop, which I'm beginning to learn is secret code for Diagon Alley in the real world. When you were giving your caseworkers aneurysms and making your foster sister fall downstairs, that was just random bursts of angry energy. Hell, maybe you didn't even realize you were doing it until you hooked up with Deaton. But he saw the sorcerer in you. And hell, he was just a fucked up kid back then. So the two of you started doing magic. Boy, did some interesting things happen around the Saunders household in those 6 months. You should see the fucking newspapers from back then. I'm thinking it's amazing those two didn't boot your ass out. Either they were incredibly kind or incredibly dense. Or hey, maybe both. Derek gives his hand another squeeze. Stone is just standing there, letting him talk, keeping that bored, amused look on his face. But his heartbeat gives the lie to his expression. But that wasn't enough for you, was it? Stiles continues. It was never going to be enough for you. So you talked Deaton into doing some sort of power-up spell. Some kind of selling my soul for power thing. Maybe a pact with a demon, maybe summoning some dark forces, blah, blah, sorcery mumbo jumbo blah. Let me tell you how it went down. You two hatch a plan. You run away from the Saunders together. You find some nice, secluded spot for sorcery and set down to business. But at the last second, Deaton balks. He knows what you're doing is going past the point of no return. He knows there's no coming back from it. And hey, Deaton's had a rough life. He's screwed up and angry, but he's not a sociopath. Not like you. He's not willing to gain power at any cost. He doubted. And the whole spell collapsed. You dove in front of him, heroically protecting him from taking any damage. Oh, and the guilt. The guilt must have eaten him alive. It was his fault that you got hurt, protecting him no less. But if only Deaton knew that you sabotaged the spell, that you wanted it to collapse so you could save him and put him in your debt, that you knew that he would have doubts and it wouldn't work anyway, so why not purposefully bomb it? That way, this guy who was always going to be more powerful than you, who was too decent at heart to ever go as dark as you, would never be able to lift a hand against you. Derek squeezes his hand again, and now Stiles gives in to the urge to give that feral smile. So, he says, what'll you give me to keep your little secret? You're a very good storyteller, Stone says. You should think about making a career out of it, if you live that long. Ooh, scary, Stiles says, grinning. The one thing I can't figure out is why you've been sending Deaton those little poems. I mean, I figure you put him in your debt and then spent the next 20 years avoiding him. Deaton was so shaken by what happened that he turned himself in, got a new foster family, and turned his life around. He made good. You, not so much. You went around being a badass warlock. Okay, sure, we've all made stupid career choices. Then you heard about the boy in red and thought, I want to get me a piece of that, for some weird reason. But hey, I am pretty awesome, so I can dig it. And then you thought, crap, that's Deaton's territory. But you just couldn't resist. You just had to come check me out. You couldn't have done it without involving Deaton, because I'm friends with him. But you couldn't have known that ahead of time. So why contact him at all? Why not simply pretend he didn't exist? Stone shrugs. If he hadn't known it was me, he would have come blasted me off the face of the map. Now, see, that is a lie, Stiles says. And I know it, because those little poems of yours don't say, don't hurt me, or even, don't forget you owe me. They say, come and get me. You're taunting him just as much as you're after me. Every one of these attacks has been set up to get underneath his skin. You didn't pick Derek as your first target by chance. You picked him because he's the last surviving Hale. And Deaton was friends with the Hale family. You're not carrying Jackson off to the dark side because I care about the douche so much. You're doing it because you know it's torture to Deaton to watch an innocent lose himself to black magic. So that's my question, Sebastian. Why are you sending Deaton those poems? And if you answer me, I won't tell Deaton that he doesn't really owe you a debt. Now Stone smiles again. And that is a lie as well, isn't it? Of course you'll tell him. Ha! Yeah, you're right about that, Stiles says. I'm not exactly a good guy myself, you know? Kind of in the morally ambiguous zone. But, Stone says, I'll answer your question if you answer one of mine.
Oh, sure, cool, Stiles says. I'll even go first. Hit me.
Who, in Beacon Hills, do you hate the most? The question takes Stiles a little off guard. He can see why Stone would want to know who he cares about, so he has new targets to torture. But why would Stone care about who he hates? He thinks about saying, you, but doubts that it will get him an answer to his own question. And in any case, he finds that it's not really true. Maybe he should hate Stone more than anyone else, but he doesn't. Because at least Stone has some valid reasons for being fucked up. So the answer just falls out of his mouth. Adrian Harris. Stone tilts his head to one side and smiles again. Interesting. All right. The reason I'm sending Alan poems is because he has something of mine, and I want it back.
So why not just email him and say you want it back? Stiles asks.
Where would be the fun in that? Stone asks. He tips an imaginary hat, then turns and walks away, moving right between Isaac and Boyd. Both of them growl at him, but Stiles gives them a quick shake of his head, and Stone never flinches, walking between the two wolves as if they weren't even there.
Okay, Stiles says at breakfast the next morning, bright-eyed and perky and buzzed on Adderall. We've rattled Stone's cage. Now it's time to take Jackson off the field. Then we get to go see Deaton and find out what the hell he's hanging on to that Stone wants so badly.
What are you going to tell him about Stone? Scott asks.
Nothing, Stiles says. You are going to tell him about Stone, because you're the good guy, and because Deaton knows you. He knows that while I might lie to hurt him, if it would gain me an advantage, you won't. You would never do that to someone you cared about, someone who has helped you. So you are going to tell him what Stone did. You game?
Scott nods. I'm up for it.
One of the favors that Danny has done, albeit very reluctantly, is plant a couple bugs in Jackson's house. He really doesn't like having done so, but Stiles made the excellent point that the more Jackson's spells escalate, the more they run the risk of him doing something nasty to his parents. He also does not want a repeat of the Lydia incident. Stiles ordered them from some spy shop on the internet, tested them, and found that they worked perfectly. Danny stuck one to the underside of the Whitmore's kitchen table, and one underneath the coffee table in their living room. Stiles didn't ask him to bug Jackson's bedroom, because the dude does deserve some privacy, and also, he does not want to be subjected to Jackson's idea of music. He also promises Danny that he would only listen to them at specific moments when he suspected something might happen. Stiles is beginning to think that Danny's moral compass is equal to Scott's. Practically, what this means is that he's getting a ringside seat to the conversation that his father is about to have with Mr. and Mrs. Whitmore. After some consideration, Sheriff Stilinski decided he would go see Jackson's parents at home. It's less intimidating than dragging them down to the station, and he doesn't want to go to Mr. Whitmore's office because he wants both parents to be there. So he drops by on Thursday evening. Danny has volunteered to make sure that Jackson's out of the house. Stiles told his father about the recording devices, and his father just rolled his eyes and told him that he would try to forget Stiles had said that. Mr. Whitmore looks somewhat surprised to see the sheriff on his doorstep, although he's out of uniform, wanting to be somewhat casual. But he greets him courteously enough and invites him in.
"To what do we owe the pleasure?" he asks, as they sit down in the living room. "I hope this isn't about Harris," he adds, shaking his head a little. "No, no, nothing to do with that," Stilinski says. "To be honest, Mike, I'm worried about your son."
He folds his hands in front of himself and nods his thanks to Jackson's mother as she sets a bottle of water down next to him before settling down on the sofa next to her husband.
"This little rivalry he's got going on with my son and Scott McCall was cute in third grade, but..."
"Yes, we're well aware," Whitmore says, rolling his eyes, "like when Scott dislocated his shoulder."
"I'm not saying that there hasn't been bad behavior on both sides," Stilinski says, raising his hands in surrender. "Boys will be boys. But I think things are a little more serious than any of us knew. A few days ago, my son was in a car accident. His brakes failed. He chose to steer his car into a ditch rather than risk hitting an innocent bystander. He's lucky that nobody was seriously injured."
He sees the looks on their faces. Polite concern, but obvious confusion. They're waiting to see what this has to do with Jackson. So he takes a deep breath and takes the plunge.
"There's no easy way to say this. The reason that Stiles' brakes failed is because Jackson tampered with them."
Jackson's mother makes a wordless noise of protest. His father frowns and says,
"That's a very serious accusation, Sheriff. You're aware of that, I'm sure."
"Yes, of course," Stilinski says, "and I wouldn't have made it without evidence." He takes out his phone and presses a few buttons. Stiles' voice comes into the room, hot and angry.
Dude, Jackson, I know it was you. I just had the damn Jeep serviced a few weeks ago. I think they would have fucking noticed if something was wrong with my brakes.
Yeah? So what?
Jackson says. Stilinski can just see the smirk on his face. From the pained look on Mrs. Whitmore's face, he's pretty sure she can picture it too.
So, you've made this about more than just you and me,
Stiles says.
Innocent people could have been hurt. You're goddamn lucky that I had the sense to steer my car off the road instead of plowing through a red light.
Look, little man,
Jackson says.
You're making a huge mistake if you think I give a damn.
Stilinski sees both the Whitmores wince. Jackson hasn't exactly claimed responsibility, but then again, he isn't denying it either. And he certainly isn't showing appropriate concern.
Is this about Lydia?
Stiles asks.
What? I am so over that bitch.
Jackson says.
Oh, really?
Stiles replies.
Is that why you slipped her a fucking roofie and tried to score with her?
Another wince. But Jackson just laughs.
Lydia would tell a different tale.
Lydia's not telling any damn tales at all because she has no fucking memory of what happened that night.
Stiles says, the words practically a growl.
If Danny hadn't called me to come get her? Oh no, she might have actually enjoyed getting laid for once.
Jackson says,
it's not like you lay the pipe right.
There's a long pause. Sheriff knows from experience that Stiles is fighting for composure. Finally, he says,
what's up with you, man? You've always been a douche, but not like this. Never like this. You could have gotten me killed with that little stunt with my brakes, and you know that. You're not a fucking idiot.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have cried at your funeral,
Jackson says.
So I fucked with your brakes. Why don't you prove it? Challenge fucking accepted, jackass.
Stiles says, and the recording ends. Jesus, Mr. Whitmore mutters, holding his head in his hands. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Stilinski gives them a moment to work through it all, then says gently, I've talked to Stiles about this. You may find it hard to believe, but he's worried about Jackson. They've been enemies so long, I think Stiles thinks of him as something of a friend. Even if he didn't, well, Stiles knows what it's like to have a rough year. He told me that he doesn't want to press charges. As long as you make sure that Jackson gets the appropriate psychological evaluation and treatment. Mr. Whitmore takes a deep breath. What happened with Lydia? That's a good question, Stilinski says, and I don't have a thorough answer. What we know is that Danny came over one night and found them, let's say, romantically involved. He had a suspicion that something was up, so he separated them. He talked to Lydia and thought that she seemed kind of spacey and not really all there, is how he put it. So he called Stiles to come pick her up. Lydia doesn't remember any of what happened, and Jackson insists that the encounter was consensual. There's a long silence. Mrs. Whitmore lets out a shaky laugh and says, I'm sorry. This is just a lot to suddenly take in. We knew he had been moody lately, but...
I know, Stilinski says. I'm a father, too, and God knows that Stiles has had his rough patches. Enough to give me a lot of gray hair. I don't want to put Jackson in jail, now or in a year or in 5 years. But he needs help, and I want to make sure that he gets it.
Mr. Whitmore nods. He looks like he's aged 10 years in the last 10 minutes. He knows damned well that Stilinski is being a lot nicer than he needs to be. The stunt with the brakes would be enough for a murder charge. Whether or not the taped confession would be admissible in a court of law is a subject they could debate, but with the lack of remorse he showed, no judge or jury would be inclined to cut him any slack. We'll talk to him. He reaches out and puts an arm around his wife, who has started to cry. Thank you for bringing this to us directly. Stilinski nods. He and Whitmore shake hands, and he tells Whitmore to call him any time,
if he needs help finding the right resources. Whitmore offers to reimburse him for any costs associated with getting the Jeep fixed after the accident, and Stilinski says he would appreciate that. Nothing is said about what will happen if Jackson pulls another stunt. Nothing needs to be said. Stiles has spent this entire conversation waiting down the street in his shiny new rental car, which he already hates because it isn't his Jeep. It's a Honda Civic, the dorkiest, most sensible car on the planet. He's sitting there with the heat on, Derek sitting in the passenger seat, both of them just listening. When Stilinski leaves, Stiles breathes a sigh of relief. "That went better than expected," he says. The admissibility of the tape had concerned him. Jackson's father is a lawyer, and he could have tried to argue. But Lydia had been adamant that he wouldn't, because this isn't about whether or not he has the evidence to convict Jackson in a court of law. It's about the fact that their son has done something terrible, that their son needs help. "I keep telling you that Jackson's parents are human beings," Lydia remarks from the back seat. She had claimed a ticket to this event as well, and Stiles hadn't argued. She certainly had a right to it. Erica has come along as well, mostly because she, like Derek, doesn't feel entirely comfortable letting Stiles out of her sight right now. Physically, he's almost entirely healed from his accident, although he's still feeling a little dicey about the lacrosse game on Saturday. Mentally, he's been a little more than edgy, but more of an excited edgy than a frustrated edgy. Things are finally happening, and he feels far better about everything than before. They sit there until Jackson's car zooms up into the driveway. Danny gets out of the passenger seat, waves, and heads to his own car, which is parked on the street. Once Jackson is inside, he veers and jogs down to where Stiles is parked. Stiles will give the damn Honda one thing. It allows him to be incognito. No one would ever look for him in a car like that. Danny opens the passenger side door and squeezes in beside Lydia. "How'd it go?" he asks anxiously. "With the Whitmores and my dad? Fine," Stiles says. "Now the other shoe drops." Danny winces, but doesn't protest. But he winces again, harder, when they hear the Whitmores say, "Jackson, we need to talk." "Yeah, what?" Jackson says in his usual brusque tone. "Come sit down with me," Whitmore says. Stiles hopes they stay in the living room. They're prepared that they might have to intervene here. He's hoping that deep down, or maybe not even so deep, Jackson loves his adoptive parents. It might be the only thing that protects them during this conversation, because he's sure that Jackson is going to flip his shit. "Your mother and I are concerned about you." "I'm fine," Jackson says. "Everything's fine. Better than ever." Whitmore gives a little sigh. "This rivalry you've got going on with the Stilinski kid, you're taking it way too far. I know that he's dating Lydia, and that must be really hard for you, but what you did to his car was a crime. A serious crime, Jackson. If he had been killed, you could have been charged with first-degree murder. As it is, you're lucky that you're not being charged with attempted murder, or at the very least, aggravated assault." Jackson just laughs. "I don't know what that little bitch told you, but..." "Jackson," his father interrupts gently, "they've got you on a recording, admitting you did it." Silence. "Furthermore, this whole thing with Lydia, that's disturbing on a level that I never would have worried about with you," his father continues, his voice trembling a little. "You need help, Jackson. I know that you've always been anxious to prove yourself, to do well at everything, but..." "Hey, why don't you just lay off me?" Jackson says loudly. "For the first time in my life, I'm actually getting the things I want. Is it that hard for you to accept that?" There's a long pause. Then his father says, "I've set up an appointment for you with a psychologist tomorrow. Not here, in Modesto. I know it's a bit of a drive, but..."
"I'm not going to any goddamn counselor," Jackson says. "I'm fine."
Jackson, his father says sharply, a hint of steel creeping into his voice. You are going to see this counselor, because if you don't, your mother and I are prepared to have you admitted to a hospital.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Jackson asks incredulously.
Jackson, this is serious,
Whitmore shouts.
You tried to kill someone. You tried to rape your ex-girlfriend. That behavior is deeply concerning. And maybe your mother and I are somewhat at fault because we've always spoiled you. We've taught you that you can have anything you want. But you can't, son. And I'm not your son,
Jackson snaps. Yes, you are, Whitmore says wearily, the automatic response of someone who has had that argument many times. In every way except genetically, yes, you are my son. And by God, we are going to take care of this. You are going to that psychologist tomorrow, and she's going to do an evaluation. And if she decides you need to be admitted to the hospital for the safety of yourself and those around you, then that's what we are going to do. Because I'm not going to sit by while you hurt people, while you hurt yourself.
Jesus fucking Christ!
Jackson snaps. And then there are footsteps and the noise of a door slamming. Denny grimaces. Could have gone worse, I guess. Lydia reaches out and grips his hand, then addresses Stiles. Do you think he'll be admitted? No, Stiles says. He's too smart for that. Now that he knows his parents know, he'll play it down. Be teary and apologetic, rather than an asshole. He doesn't want people thinking he's a sociopath, so he'll say he didn't realize how serious it all was. But it'll scare the crap out of him. So either he'll steer clear of us and give us some breathing room, or he'll do something gigantic and in all likelihood kill us all.
Way to be an optimist, Stiles,
Erica says, rolling her eyes. Hey, I said or, Stiles says. Denny rubs both hands over his face. I'll keep an eye on him, he says. But Stiles, you may want to skip the lacrosse game on Saturday.
Yeah, I was already thinking about that anyway,
Stiles says, rubbing at the fading bruise on his chest. Even if I felt able to play, I'm pretty sure most reasonable adults that don't know I have accelerated healing would have an apoplexy if I tried. So I'll sit it out. But let me know if anything happens, if you need us for anything. I will. Denny hesitates. Thanks. I hope this will help him. He gets out of the car without another word and heads back towards his own. Stiles waits until he's gotten in and driven away before he heads back home.